It's time for the Mac Geek Gab, and listener Tony brings us our quick tip of the week. Anyone using list views sorted by dates will be vexed by how the Finder doesn't change the modified date of an aliased folder when items within that folder are actually changed, added, or deleted. You can easily change the modified date of that aliased folder using Terminal. Just open the Terminal window and type touch, that's the word touch, T-O-U-C-H, add a space, and then drag that aliased file, or aliased folder into the Terminal window. That's given it the path. Now the alias's date is changed to today. I use Keyboard Maestro to create a shortcut to bring up a Terminal window and type the touch command, but it shouldn't be too hard for someone with a lot more skills than me to create a shortcut Automator script or Apple script to do this for you. More tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab number 1063 for Monday, November 11th. Veterans Day, Armistice Day,
Metal Day.
2024. Yeah.
And indeed, welcome to Mac Geek Gab number 1063, the show where you send in your quick tips, you send in your cool stuff found, you send in your questions, we share them, we answer them, we discuss them, we use them to ensure that each of us learns at least five new things every single time we get together. Sponsors for today's episode include glean.com/MGG. Their powerful AI connects and understands all your company's data and pulls in like Slack and all kinds of other things so that you just have this smart thing that just sees everything that you want it to see. And also, BB Edit at barebones.com, my favorite text editor. It's running all the time on my Mac. I use it to manage the show notes. I use it to do all kinds of things. We'll talk more about all that in a little bit. And as many of you know, I have ChatGPT write me the ad scripts, and I tell it to put something, a little Easter egg in each time that we can all listen for. And a lot of times you're hearing me read it cold for the first time. So we'll do that a little bit later. For now, here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And here also in New Hampshire, it's Pilot Pete.
Welcome
police
back.
Code 1063, subject positive, prepared a copy. That's it. Get your pens and paper out, folks. We got a lot of good stuff coming your way today.
What was that? I don't think.
Prepared a copy. 1063. Prepared a copy. Get ready to write this down.
That's the police code. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
For a transcript of this show, write down every word you hear.
Yep. Pete's back.
Yeah.
Pete, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Yeah. And thanks, everyone, for your service. Veterans Day here.
Yes, indeed. And you know, Dave, let me go on a personal note for about 10 seconds here and say thank you also to all the families, because without the families supporting the veterans that did it, it wouldn't have been able to be done. A lot of birthdays and anniversaries and funerals and weddings and all that kind of stuff missed and sacrificed. Family sacrifices as much as the veterans often.
Yeah.
So thank you to them.
Yeah. Thank you indeed. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah.
I want to talk about our monthly giveaway. This month, it is, if you go to MacGeekGab.com/giveaway, it is the OWC Express 1M2 SSD enclosure. Lots of interest in that. It's a cool thing. I actually got to see one of those at PepCom last week. Lightweight. Uh-huh. It's everything you think it is. And I want to give a quick congratulations to our October giveaway winners. Silver Teed, Andy Dolph, Mikhail Rappaport, Richie Lillies, and Cassandra Derensburg. And my apologies if I mispronounced any of your names. But yeah, that was the one with Eternal Storms. So great stuff. Great stuff. Shall we continue with quick? Go ahead, Pete.
We should, but actually I want to go back to the opening quick tip and ask a question, Dave, because you were talking about you're in an aliased folder, which means that the original file is somewhere else. If you change something within that aliased folder, does it not change that file back in the original folder?
So what they were saying is that the modified date of the folder,
on the folder.
would change.
Does change.
The modified date
of the original folder.
Of the actual folder of the folder itself. But the alias, the modified date of the alias doesn't change. And that makes sense.
Right.
Because the alias was created at a certain time. But I also understand why, if it's an alias of a folder, you would want the modified date of that to match the folder.
Sync up, match
up. Yeah. So, yeah, you could even write a little script that you could schedule with Lingon or something that every 5 minutes or so ran and checked to see if the modified date of the destination folder, the original folder, was newer than the modified date of the alias. And if so, then run your little touch script so that it terminal command so that it's just always within 5 minutes or so it's up to date. Yeah. That'd be another way to do it.
There's a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
You could do the other thing and make a dangerous alias, but don't do that.
Well, now that you've mentioned dangerous aliases, Adam, pray tell, what do you mean?
I'm trying to remember, because I'm going to get myself in trouble because I don't remember the exact terms, but there's two kinds of aliases. There's the alias that's just like a pointer to the other thing.
The shortcut.
You can also make it.
Yeah.
And there's also in the terminal, you can make an alias, and I forget the command, so Linux people will let me know what it is and tell me the term, but basically you can create an alias that's... It acts exactly like the original thing.
Oh, soft so links versus hard alien, links.
Hard links, yes. Yeah. And I bet in that scenario it would update because it's basically, it's like a clone of that thing in essence.
Yeah.
So like if you were to delete your alias folder, normally, you know, if it's soft when you delete it, you're just deleting the alias. If you made one of these and deleted it, you'd be deleting it.
Not necessarily. So right. Soft links are
a
little bit, I think. So soft links are symlinks, we also call them, right? Where it's a symbolic link, and an alias is a type of symbolic link. It's like sort of special in the Finder. But you're right. If you go into the terminal and you create a symbolic link, it effectively acts the same as an alias. It is a pointer to the original folder. But if you delete the original folder in that case, the alias will, or the symbolic link will now be orphaned. A hard link is actually what happens when you create a file or a folder where there's the directory entry for it, like in the table of contents, and that points to the location on the media where the data actually is, right? And so every file and folder on your Mac essentially already has one hard link to it. You can point a second hard link to it. And that way, if you were to delete the original, the second would still point to your data. If you delete the second, the first would still point to your data. If you delete both, then the data is gone.
Dave did a much better job explaining it than I did.
It's really confusing, though. And Time Machine, I'm pretty sure still, but certainly initially, relies on hard links to do all of this. And that's how it can expire old versions of your backup, but if the same file exists in a new one, the hard link points to it and it persists, right? Like that's kind of the magic, if you will, underneath Time Machine and its versioning. So,
yeah. Anyway, just use the shortcut thing, and you won't get yourself in too much trouble.
I woke up less than an hour ago.
Yeah, you did. Good job.
Yeah, well, you just twisted a lobe in my brain. So.
Same.
Let's move on,
shall we?
Hey, yeah, Patrick wrote in with a really cool one here. He says, "I'm not sure if everyone already knows this or not. He didn't, but he discovered it. I typically listen to podcasts on my iPhone with a single AirPod in my ear. I'm not a big fan of CarPlay, but often plug my phone in so it can charge. And every time I do, the audio switches off in my ear. So I have to go to Overcast, navigate to Overcast, choose the alternative output, not USB, and move it back to my AirPods. Ha ha ha, how do I fix that? Recently, he says, I just pinched my AirPods and the audio restarted in my ear. Boom. One quick touch. Done.
Nice.
Great tip. And I tried it. Works like a champ.
Huh.
That's cool.
So tell me why you would want, why you would not want it to just stay on your car.
I mean, if I'm alone, I do.
Okay.
But if my kids are in the car and they want to listen to music, they don't want to listen to dad's aviation show or political show or tech show, then I put it in one ear.
This makes sense.
Yeah.
Interesting. And so, you don't, now I know I've been in a plane with you.
I don't do it with both ears.
I figured you didn't do it with both ears, but the question I was going to ask was, you don't find it confusing to hear music and conversation in the car and also listen to the thing. But I know from being in a plane with you that you can pay attention to tower chatter in one ear and other my chatter in the other. And even though I also was hearing tower chatter in my ear, you would catch, I would catch maybe 15% of the times that the tower talked to us, and you would catch maybe more, but certainly not as many as you. There were a lot of times we were in conversation, you were like, hang on. I was like, wait, okay. Yeah, maybe it wasn't 15%. Maybe it was, it was, you know, 60% and you caught 98%, but
Well, I still, but the biggest problem I still have in that realm is when I'm flying my own airplane. Instead of using November 1, 2, Tango Romeo, I'll go, FedEx, November 1, 2, guess what I do for a living?
Yeah, I've seen that. I can confirm. Yeah, especially after landing. That seems to be the point where you are on such, your voice is on such an autopilot because you're, the thing you're paying attention to is
where I am and not having a runway or taxiway incursion or something like that. Yeah.
Right. So the, I'm just talking the chatter becomes thinking. Becomes the automatic, which listen, as a passenger in the plane, if that's the part that becomes automatic, I'm here for it. Like, you'd much rather have your front of mind attention, your foreground processes focused on not banging the plane into someone else. So,
So, as I said, I'm talking without thinking, much like I do here every week, folks.
Oh, same. Yeah.
All right. Let me take us to Patrick's tip. He's got one for us.
Second one from Patrick. All right. Let's do it.
Is it the same? I don't know if it's the same Patrick.
I don't
or
know
not,
if it's. Maybe yeah, it it's is. A second Patrick. Yeah. I don't know.
He says, I've never heard this one before, so I thought I'd pass it along. Well, thank you very much. You can use Quick Look in an open save dialog box. I use default folder, but I don't think that affects this. I don't think it does either because I use Quick Look in open save dialog boxes all the time. So what you do is he says he uses it especially with opening up Excel documents. He says I usually have a few versions of the spreadsheet I'm working on. So I key command open. When the dialog box appears, I click the link or click on the file rather. That I think is the correct version, and I hit the space bar. Then you get Quick Look. Another touch of the space bar dismisses Quick Look, and from there you can open or move on. And I use this all the time to exact same reason. Sometimes you're like, is this the right file? You know, if you, I try to be good with my file naming, but you know, occasionally you aren't. So great tip, Patrick.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of those that, you know, we just do, and we assume everybody else just do.
Right.
It's the epitome of a quick tip. Yeah.
Of the quick tip, right? You know, hey, this is it. Wait, how'd you do that? Oh, I just did. Oh, man.
I don't. This sounds new to me, but I'm sure I do it without thinking about it.
Without even thinking about it.
Yes. Yeah. I can almost guarantee you do.
Wait, which file do I want? Oh, that's the one.
That's the one. Yeah. Because I'm so used to Quick Look is a part of my fingers and the way that I use the Finder. So I would assume I've done it in a open save dialog, but it sounds new to me. So it might be. I don't know.
Here's
where
it gets confusing. I'll find myself in an open save dialog, and it looks so much like Finder, I'll try to start doing Finder.
Well, you can do some Finder level things in there, you know, so... another tip that I think people know but maybe don't know is you can, you know, drag a folder or a file into an open dialog box from the Finder. to get there. So if you already have something on your desktop or something, you can just like drag it in there and it'll jump right to that location.
Yes. And one, an extension of that feature is something default folder adds, which is if you're in an open or save dialog and you have default folder running, you can float over a Finder window and it will like it kind of like you're taking a screenshot of it, of a window. It'll highlight. And if you click it, you don't even have to drag it. It will just put it as your destination, which I use. Uh-huh. That's probably the feature of default folder that I use the most, I think.
See, now there you go. I had not heard of default folder.
Seriously?
Is it a... Yeah.
Wow. John and I used to talk about default folder all the time. I don't know if it's in setup. It's from, John
Gotell.
I'll
look while we move on.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'll put a link in the show notes. It's one of those things. It also lets you do a lot more Finder commands in the open save dialogues. So you can, you know, rename and duplicate and do all kinds of stuff. And then there is its, you know, titular purpose, which is that it allows you to set a default folder for each application. So you can, that's kind of the one that, you know, was initially created for.
So here's the thing. Not only is it in setup, it's already installed and the permissions are already allowed. And so, yeah, thank you, setup.
There you go.
That's how quick and easy it is to use this stuff with setup.
It's true.
Although I got a notification from them this week. Did you see it, Dave, about Jump Desktop?
No.
Yeah, Jump Desktop is leaving setup. So he says, as long as you have it installed, you'll continue to be able to use it until such update that it doesn't work anymore. But they are leaving setup. Don't get it.
I don't get it.
Don't do that.
It happens. Yeah. Yep. Henry has our next quick tip. This one's for your iPhone. He says, if you search for an app and get the results listed at the top of the screen, then press and hold on an app icon. You'll get menu of little actions, but that's not the feature. If at this point you start dragging your finger, you can move that app out of the search results, your home screen will reappear, and you can place that app icon on any of your home screens or in the folders on them. But if you already had that app on one of your home screens, it will remain there, and you can place this duplicate app icon anywhere you want, including right next to the original icon. This confused me at first because I thought dragging the app had removed it from its usual spot. I was searching through my home screens looking for the screen where this app had gone missing from, but I couldn't find it because it wasn't missing. This does not work if you start your search from the lock screen. Makes sense. He says, I suppose this could be useful if you wanted to create different screens for use with different focus modes and yet have the same app in both. But if you need to remove one, remember to remove from the home screen rather than deleting the app. Yes, very
bingo.
Good advice.
Yeah. Whoops.
Yeah. Don't get caught.
Yeah. This was added for focus modes. I think that was the main reason, right? Is because you can have different screens set up. Like I have one that was just like a weekend screen or whatever that would become my default home screen. You know, when I'm not during the week, so it had more casual apps that I would use.
Yep.
Or new, like news widgets, or I forget what I put on. Oh, I think I put the Apple TV widget so I could see my up next stuff. And
Yeah.
I don't use it very much, but that was the idea when I set it up.
Yeah, right. Fun stuff.
That's for those of you that still use home screens. Dave showed me how he does nothing on your home screen.
Oh, I have
one or two, a couple apps, Like I have maps and two shortcuts.
Oh, interesting. See, I don't even have a maps on my home screen because it comes up in CarPlay.
I should probably lose that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I have one home screen that has like settings and photos and my Sonos app and Safari. But that's basically it. Everything else I run from search. if I need to. Yeah.
You've got to remember the name of the app and that you even have it.
That it's true. It's true. I've also found a change. I when iOS 18 came out, or when the beta, when I got the betas, I started using, if you hold down, I'm pretty sure this is how you do this. If you hold down on an app icon, you can choose, what's the feature? You can choose to, you can choose to require Face ID for an app. That's on the home screen.
Oh yeah.
You also can, which is cool. Like, so that an app can't launch if you happen to hand your phone to someone, they would,
you don't want them going through your photos.
Exactly. Or, you know, right. Whatever. Or whatever, your email, or your messages,
Any
whatever.
App.
Any app, you can do that. That's one thing. That's not where I wanted to go with this. But I went there. So the other thing that you can do is if you go into, on 18.2 or whatever, it's Apple Intelligence and Siri. But if you go into either the settings for an app or the settings for Siri, you can go and tell any given app, learn from this app, show on home screen, let Siri search this app, those kinds of things. And if you turn off suggest this app is one of the options, with iOS 18, it would still show up when you searched for it in, just pull down and type the app name. It either 18.1 or 18.2, I can't remember which, took this away. So if you have an app that you told it, you just turned off all of those things for the Siri, privacy settings for an app. You turned off learn from this app, show on home screen, suggest apps, suggestion notifications, use with Siri requests. If you turn that off for an app, it will no longer show up in your search results. So that app, if you do that to an app, I highly recommend putting it on a home screen somewhere so that you can launch it.
Well, there's that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Otherwise, how would you ever even find it and get rid of it?
I think you could I will confirm
app
this.
App list.
If you go to the app library, which is the past your last home screen.
Yeah.
Let me make sure it's there.
Yeah.
It's probably searchable there. Still there.
Oh, yeah. Let's see if it's searchable there. That's a great question.
I would assume it is because that's its own search, separate from Siri search, which is the global search. Yeah.
You're 100% correct. Yep. Yep, it's still there. So yes, it's searchable. That's interesting that's a different search than the search on every other page of your iPhone. Okay.
Well, I'm pretty sure the setting that you would not want to turn off if you want it to show up in Siri search is the suggest app one.
Right.
I would think that's the key one to not disable if you want it searchable by Siri to surface it in a search.
Yeah. Let's see.
Because Siri is suggesting that app when you're doing your search, suggesting it. I think you mean this. I think is the idea.
Well, it didn't work initially, but maybe over time. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Or
I
maybe
wonder which flag it is then.
Maybe it's show on home screen. Yeah. Let's see. I'll try it again. Nope. I'll have to
mess
with it.
Here we play. Guess the engineer's intent. It's a fun game. You can play at home.
You can. Yeah, you too can play this game. We have yet to figure it out. So let us know. Feedback at MattGeekGab.com if you figure it out.
Hold on. Feedback at MattGeekGab.com?
Yeah.
That's what I heard. Feedback at MattGeekGab.com.
Yep.
Guess the engineer's intent. There's a show title, Dave.
That is
I don't know if the that's the title. Best one, but... We could do better.
This tip from Paul that we have teed up next, Adam.
Yes.
We already did this or no? Kind of?
We did not.
Okay.
Did we?
I don't know. Go ahead and read it. We'll pretend.
Oh, did I do a spoiler?
You might have done a...
Unknowingly did a spoiler.
A little spoiler. Yeah. But go ahead.
Yeah. Paul says, interestingly enough, I thought of you guys... When I was recently doing some work in Illustrator, after finishing my photos, I had to save them out into a very specific file organization system. However, I was having trouble navigating to where to save in the export to window. I knew I had the folder open in my Finder, so from the Finder, something told me to click the correct folder location and drag it into the export to window in Illustrator. Voila, it populated in the window with exactly where I needed to save my file. All I had to do was click save. P.S. This also works in Open Document window. Oh, really?
Yep.
And this is throughout the OS, not just in Adobe. Yes, you're right, Paul. And that is a great tip. We should tell people about that.
I like it. We're having fun.
That is weird. I swear to you, I did not even... I hadn't pre-read that.
Connect the dots.
So, yeah.
Great minds think alike, Paul. That's what it is.
That's actually what it is. Yeah. It's what it is. I love it. Yeah. And, you know, it's not uncommon for us to get the same tip, you know, especially after we have a conversation like we just did, where someone's like, I can't believe you talked about this and didn't also then mention this tip. And often it's because we didn't know about the tip. But, and then we get to share it, which is great. But sometimes, yeah, it'll be, you know, 10, 15 emails about the same thing. It's like, yeah, which is great. Like, I love that we do that. It's awesome. Yeah. Don't assume that someone else will send in the tip that is obvious to you, though, please. Because that's not necessarily true. Yeah. As we've all learned. Todd says, I accidentally discovered that now on Watch OS 11... from the watch face, I can scroll down with the digital crown or swipe up from the bottom of the screen to open the smart stack. I'm not sure if this was possible before, but I like the swipe up better than rolling of the crown. Yeah, I think that is new in watchOS 11. Of all the operating systems that Apple makes, watchOS is the one where with each annual iteration, they take huge liberties with changing like fundamental user interface. Yeah.
Yes, they do.
It's interesting, right?
Which some of them are good. So some of them are not, but you know, yeah. Like the one I find I get this calendar and a tiny analog watch face and then notifications up all the time. But the other thing you talked about rolling up on the crown, what happens if you roll down on the crown? Do you know?
You get
all your notifications.
Oh.
Take the crown and pull down. Huh. And you get all the
rules. Well, yeah, because it's right. It's the equivalence of the swipes, right? And if you swipe down, don't you get the... I can't... Because, again, they change it all the time. I can't remember.
Yeah, if you swipe down on the face. So, essentially, the crown is the same as swiping on the screen.
Yes.
That's the right left and right swipe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The idea there originally, and I think it still kind of holds true mostly, was that, you know, you could use the digital crown instead of your finger for whatever thing. So like, you know, if you're in an app that scrolls, it does the scrolling. And the idea was that you're not blocking the UI. And also you're not blocking the UI with your finger. So if you want to like actually see what's on the screen, because the screen was, you know, relatively small, your finger is pretty large. So you're blocking a good portion of the screen. But yeah, no, I hate the changes. Like when they got rid of the swipe up is now the stack instead of control center, I wish I could change that back.
Yeah.
Cause I still to this day will like swipe up expecting to get to control center to like toggle Bluetooth or turn my speaker off or put it into theater mode, you know, the things that I do common. And then I have to remember which button did they move it to? I think
it's the and I still side don't remember now, right?
Is it the side button or the crown?
Well, the crown gets you to all your apps. On the Ultra.
No.
And then the side button gets you to control center.
Yeah.
And then action button turns on my nightlight.
Yeah.
So. Stop changing it.
This is really interesting. Like, what a commentary on, I mean, I know we're having this discussion, but like the fact that we're having this discussion is a commentary on how confusing this is, because here's three people who at our own levels, but very fairly are early adopters with things, and I certainly don't want to call us technically astute, but technically interested, right? You know, and like to be aware of the little nitpicks because we do this show, yeah. Right? Our minds are trained to be aware of the little nitpicks, and yet none of the three of us would know the answer to, wait, what does that button do on your watch?
Right.
It's like I said, it's a commentary on
it. They take wild liberties with the operating system on the watch.
Yeah.
Just on the watch overall.
Just on the watch.
They have with other operating systems, obviously, you know, nothing is sacred.
No.
But, you know, historically, that's where Apple started, and they've changed that behavior. You know,
even the no buttons thing is not sacred on the iPhone anymore.
Yeah, so. Right. Yeah.
They're adding
look
more.
Look how many we have. Yeah,
can we get 16
from
more?
To five.
Yeah, it's interesting. Speaking of buttons that do things you might not have known, this is a software button on the macOS calendar. Steve says, if you juggle multiple calendar accounts like I do, did you know that if you click and hold the plus button at the top of calendar, you can choose which specific calendar you want to add your quick event to? Try it. That's fascinating. That's helpful. I like that.
That's good.
Yeah.
Because for some reason, it always seems to be my wife, and then I have to go in and delete it or move it to my calendar.
Yeah.
She's like, why did you set me up for an appointment at the urologist? I didn't, honey. Never mind.
I didn't. That's right. But can you drive me? Yeah.
Yeah. Bingo.
Yeah. I was on the phone with our friend Doc Rock this week, actually talking to him about Ecamm Live, which is what does as his day job. Yeah. And we were talking about how, you know, on Instagram, we were lamenting the fact that you still can't put a clickable link in an Instagram post, right? You can type a URL into the text field when you create an Instagram post, mm-hmm. but Instagram does not make it clickable, right? And that's long been the thing. It's probably to keep people in the river of things on Instagram and not encourage people to leave. And I'm sure there's lots of thought behind it or not, but it is the way that it is. And he's like, yeah, but all you have to do now, if you want to click a link that someone put in an Instagram post, is take a screenshot of the post. And then in the screenshot thing, everything, nothing is sacred. You can tap text, and if it's a link, it will become a link, and you can click it, and off you go. Brilliant. And this obviously works elsewhere other than Instagram. It's not just limited to that, but it is a thing. And I've done it ever since he told me about it. It has just become a default part of my workflow because so many people put URLs in there. So that's
how
with
you do the feature that Apple added where you don't have to save the screenshot, right? You get the preview, you just delete it and you're done.
You're done. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Another thing that Lisa, I think it was Lisa, it was you last week talking about the making the camera button, because we all forget to use the camera button as our camera. We still use the old gesture. Was it on this show last week? Am I rehashing something where you said maybe make the camera button just your QR code scanner? Was that you, Adam, that said that to me?
Yeah. Okay. We were talking about that. There's a bunch of settings for that. The tip was that you can change it to a double press, so you're not accidentally activating it. So that was the tip from a listener. And then I went, when we were in looking at the settings, I noticed, you can actually assign it to any quote unquote camera app because it supports third party apps. So if you use a third party camera versus Apple's, you can change it to that. But you can also change it to Apple's QR scan app. So just to bring up QR scan, and I might change mine to that.
Or Instagram if you want. Sure.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. If you wind up sharing, I hadn't thought about it that way, Pete. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Now I'm recording. I'm recording this.
I'm recording it too, Pete. We'll save it for the listeners. Yeah.
Warning, this conversation's being recorded. I can't get it. Yeah. Dang nabbit. Oh, well.
And in our chat at MacGeekGab.com/Discord, Porthos John says, the press and hold on the camera button for image intelligence is actually pretty cool. And he says that might be in beta 18.2. I forget which one is live now. It's 18. Can you get image playgrounds and image intelligence? Image intelligence, I think, is only 18.2. But yes.
Yeah.
That
I think they're still on beta for 18.1.
Yeah, okay. I mean, so
that's been released yet.
18.2, you can do image intelligence.
Oh, it is live.
Yeah, the beta is. You can because 18.1 is out now. I think 18.1
yes, it is live. Yeah.
It's so rare for me to still be on iOS betas at this point, but because of all the Apple intelligence stuff, I want to be, so that I'm getting those new features. But yeah, pressing and holding the camera button to get into image intelligence mode and have it tell you about things that it sees is pretty darn cool. So
so here's another function of that, though, that was pretty cool. If you press light touch on the camera button, I think the default is zoom, but it comes down and it shows zoom. But if you put your finger up there and pull down on it, you can then switch between exposure, f-stop, or depth, zoom, which cameras you want, the 0.5, 1, 2, or 5, or the back camera, or the tone, or the style. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So yeah, it comes up there and you just swipe down on that. There it is. Of course, we're doing it on video here, so all you listeners are kind of out of luck. Sorry.
Yeah, they'll see it.
You pull down on it and it allows you to switch between those options, because what happened, and I've discovered this because I was trying to zoom with it and it kept changing the f-stop, and I'm going, how did that happen? So somehow I changed it from zoom to f-stop. But and I actually like the f-stop better. I can zoom with my thumbs on the screen faster and
yeah,
more efficiently than the camera button. So,
and you could change all kinds of things there. Yeah. 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 It's pretty cool. I'm eager to see Halides, as we mentioned now three times, already added support for the camera button. I'm eager to see how that continues to evolve with third party developers kind of, you know, building in those features too. So, yeah,
I'm still not a fan of the camera button, but yeah, it's bad. But
yeah,
I'm warming up to it. I think it's going to be one of those things that takes a while to get used to.
Yeah,
I'm surprised. I hadn't really become enamored with the action button, but I probably need to hook it to a shortcut. Is probably what I need to do. I just don't know what shortcut I want to hook it to. So I still have it set to the stupid default.
Yep.
Silent.
Yeah. I know we've had this conversation on the show, but the idea of having context sensitive actions happening all triggered from one sort of monolithic, cascading shortcut thing where if it's, if my phone's in do not disturb and I press it and it's dark out, turn on the flashlight and like all of those things.
Yeah.
And I'll use this as a reminder, that you can have shortcuts respond differently depending on the orientation of your phone too. So if it's face down or in portrait mode or in landscape mode, like shortcuts can have that information is available to shortcuts. So you can create if statements based on, conditional logic in there. So
nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's what I need. I mean, that's what would make the action button actually useful for me. Having it be a one trick pony isn't great.
Ain't it. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
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 It was Dave. You asked me at Haunted Overload because I was struggling to pull up the camera. Oh, why don't you use the camera button? I'm like, I haven't gotten used to that yet.
Right.
And now I have because you asked me that.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Like these, and that's why I brought this topic back up because I forgot that we had had it on the show because I was talking to Lisa about it and she's like, oh, yeah, I don't use the camera button. I'm like, well, what about for a QR scanner? She's like, oh, that would be amazing. I thought she came up with it, but it was you, Adam. And as soon as I started saying it, I knew. You want to take us to our final quick tip of the week here?
I do. I discovered this quite by accident. When you swipe down from the top right in iOS, you get the control center. If you notice off to the side, there's a heart musical notes, a home, and apparently an antenna. If you touch any one of those, it will bring up the next screen. Or your other option is to swipe up or down, and you get different versions of Control Center, which I'm like, whoa. So yep. Especially like the network one, instead of having to press and hold and turn airplane mode on or off or Bluetooth, or it takes you right there to the whole thing. So, yeah. So four screens of Control Center now, because one wasn't enough.
And they're editable, right? You can
yes, yeah,
configure
absolutely.
Whatever you want. Yep, you can. I think you can have more than four screens, right, Adam? Correct me if I'm wrong.
I bet you could.
I don't know. I haven't played with it yet. Yeah, okay. I wanted to say that, but I was holding off because I haven't validated that. So I didn't want to give misinformation again.
Well, see, that's why
just say you can.
That's why I said it and asked you to confirm, because that way. All right, look. AI is all around us, right? But here's a question. Has it really made your workday easier? Well, enter our sponsor, Glean. I checked out their site and they've got a great demo video. And here's the scoop. Glean takes the apps you already use, like Slack, Jira, Google Drive, and turns them into one super smart AI search. Need to find that meeting note from 3 months ago? Glean's got it in seconds, like a personal librarian with instant recall. It's truly fantastic. And Glean doesn't just fetch data. It helps generate content, automate your work, and even answer those pesky questions faster than you can say coffee break or tea break. It's already in use by top companies in tech, telecom, and more, so you know it's the real deal. Imagine having an assistant that finds you answers so fast you'd think it has a crystal ball, you know, minus the velvet curtains. So don't get caught scrambling for information. Put AI to work where it matters. Visit glean.com/MGG for information on how you can receive 15% off your first year. That's Glean, glean.com/MGG for 15% off. Glean, work AI for all. And our thanks to Glean for sponsoring this episode. All right, look, you don't have to be a super longtime listener of this show to know that BB Edit is my go-to for all things text. And it's also our sponsor. And it's also packed with so many powerful features that it's like having a toolbox the size of a spaceship inside my computer. One of my favorites, BB Edit's cheat sheets. Forget scrolling through endless notes. BB Edit lets me create quick reference guides right inside the app. Markdown tips, coding shortcuts, you name it. I've got it all at my fingertips. It's basically a cheat code for work productivity. And then there's BB Edit's project management feature, which makes tackling big projects a breeze. It's like having a command center for your text files, keeping everything in order without a single untitled document floating around. BB Edit's got everything I need to make my work faster, smoother, and yeah, maybe a little fun, right? So don't get caught fumbling with a basic editor. Get BB Edit and feel like the tech wizard you were born to be. Head to barebones.com. Check it out. They've got a great demo period and you're going to love it. So go check it out. Barebones.com. And our thanks to BB Edit for sponsoring this episode.
All right. Awesome. Okay. Very cool. Well, now it's time for Don't Get Caught. And this week's Don't Get Caught, first one, comes from listener Jeff, who says, I just thought I'd share an experience I had that might be helpful for someone else. I started using iOS 18 public beta this past summer on my iPhone 13 Pro. One of the features I immediately started using was protecting one particular app with Face ID, as we just discussed a few minutes ago. And I found that it worked quite well, and Spotlight had no issues finding it still. However, a few weeks ago, I upgraded to the 16 Pro Max and migrated all of my data to it, and that same app was still protected by Face ID. But when I searched for the app using Spotlight, it would not find it. Initially, I thought that perhaps it was still indexing things on the new phone and it would eventually get there, but even software updates and a couple weeks of Spotlight use, it still wasn't finding the app. Finally, I removed the Face ID lock. Spotlight immediately found the app, then re-enabling the lock, Spotlight is still able to find the app. I'm not sure if this is expected behavior, try and guess what the engineers are trying to do. Right? From Apple's point of view, but I thought it might be helpful for someone. It seems that having the app locked from an iPhone backup prevents Spotlight from finding the app until that feature is disabled for a short time. It can re-index in there. So he says, I guess I got caught. But brilliant, Jeff, in figuring out how to get past that. Unlock it briefly, let Spotlight index it, then relock it. Yeah. Doesn't seem like it should be that way, but...
I would not have expected that behavior, especially if you're telling it to use it, like the conversation we just had about, if it's allowed to be used that way and it's just locked, huh? Good to know that. Yes, this is why we have the don't get caught section. Yeah, segment, whatever. Yeah. Huh. All right. Yeah.
There's some magic incantation. There's some magic combination of the things we were talking about earlier and this. Because when you started reading it, I'm like, oh, we must have missed it. So the key for it not getting, not surfacing is not the settings we were talking about earlier. It's the Face ID lock thing, right? Which would make sense. Right. You've locked that app from, being launched. Being usable. So why? Yeah, basically. But obviously, that's not exactly it. So it's something else.
Yeah.
Weird.
I don't know. I was having an email exchange with listener Kent, and we were talking about it classifying things as spam and this, that, and the other thing. And a lesson came out of it that is perfect here for our Don't Get Caught segment. And it is, be careful. Be careful when classifying email bounce messages as spam. Now, the context of this is sometimes people spoof your email address as the from address, right? And send spam to someone, right? So the initial attempt is spam. And it winds up, in some cases, going to an email address that doesn't exist or doesn't exist anymore. And so there is a bounce that happens. And of course, the bounce goes back to whatever the original email address was, and if they spoofed you, then it's you. So, yes, the content of the outbound message that triggered the bounce was spam, but the bounce is a real thing. And if you tell your spam filter to classify bounce messages as spam, it will start classifying all bounce messages as spam. And I don't know about you, but if I send an email to someone, I assume it got to them unless I see a bounce message. And
right.
The timeliness of that bounce message, at least for me in like work life.
Could be important.
It could be important. Yeah, exactly. And so.
Oh, I mistyped that address or.
Right. And,
yeah.
You know, I check my spam folder pretty frequently. I've talked about it on the show. I check it basically every 2 days. And the reason I do that is that the amount of spam I get, if I waited any longer than that, and when I do wait longer than that, it instead of taking me 90 seconds to go through my spam, now takes me 5 minutes or 10 minutes to go through my spam. And I like 90 seconds every 2 days is a good pace. But if I have just gone through my spam and it's going to be another 2 days, knowing that that bounce message actually bounced, that or the message actually bounced, that's bad. So I am judicious with what I train as spam in my spam filters, because all of them that I use Fastmails, I use Gmails, and they all seem to be a little over aggressive. So that's my tip.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I hadn't even thought of that. I'm just talking out loud, talking without thinking, as I said earlier.
I wanted to ask Dave, this was the at googlemail.com one, right? So the address, one of the things he was confused by, if I'm remembering the email right, was the from address that they had used was, he has a Gmail address, and this was the same thing at googlemail.com. And they were using that as the sender. So that was bouncing that back then to his regular Gmail. And he was a little confused, I think, by that, thinking that's why it looked more like spam or something like that. And I just wanted to point out for people who don't know that googlemail.com gmail.com is Gmail in countries where Gmail was already registered as a trademark. So I think Russia is one of those countries. So Google couldn't go in and get. So it's basically the similar thing to, like, if you have an old, like I have my old original, you know, at mac.com address or at me.com address or at iCloud. So when you have one of those old addresses, those are all equivalents, basically. So likely what was happening is, you know, somebody in some country was just scrolling through and, you know, sending messages out, spam messages out with the from address from various different Gmail accounts, basically Gmail accounts.
Yeah.
But if you see googlemail.com, that's also Gmail. It's, they're like the same equivalents, I think.
Yep. Yep. Thank you.
It's the exact same, only different.
It's just, yeah, but you're right. It's like at me.com and at mac.com and at iCloud. And yeah, it all goes same box. We got some reviews in, and I want to read two of them. Yep. MacGeekUp.com/reviews makes it super easy now for you to send your reviews in. These were both into Apple Podcast. The first one from Kenneth S. in the UK says, informative, entertaining, and enjoyable. Top quality podcast with entertaining hosts who cover a broad range of topics and are true experts in all things Apple. A truly enjoyable and engaging podcast filled with great tips and insights. I have and continue to learn lots of tips and insights in an enjoyable and entertaining format. Thank you, Kenneth S. That is our goal every single time we sit down to do this. And then Ringwood here in the United States says, great podcast is the title, 5 stars. Great weekly podcast and super helpful to listen to after Apple has an event for new devices or software. Adam and Pete have added so much great content and humor to the podcast. Thank you, Dave, your continuing efforts on the listener's behalf. Yeah, thanks. Thanks to you guys. You make this, like, yeah, it's awesome. Thanks to everybody.
And I got a comment.
Go.
If you can't give us a 5-star review, write the feedback at MacGeekGab.com and tell us what do you need to improve, and then you can give us a 5-star.
Yeah, we'll earn your 5-star review. We're trainable. We are trainable. Yeah, it's not uncommon that we get emails from you folks that are constructive criticism, and it's fantastic. We try to be aware of the flow of the show and the things that would be valuable, but candidly, this show's for you. So, like, please send that stuff in. If there's something you don't like that one of us is, or all of us are doing, tell us. It's okay.
Hey, hold on. Yeah. Hold on. I still want to keep doing this show, folks, so go easy on me. Just saying.
Yeah.
So, and it was a listener who came up with the Don't Get Caught segment. How cool is that?
The segment. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I don't know how... I know I said this when we started the segment, but I don't know how we didn't think, because, well, you know, over the years, we'd bake like the PSAs, the warnings into like quick tips. Yeah. And it was like, I guess we just shove this here. How we didn't think to call it the Don't Get Caught segment is beyond me.
Yep.
It was right.
Because it was
right
sitting there in front of you.
It was right
hiding
there.
Hiding in plain sight.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. I think I want to throw my plug in here, my new announcement, since we're doing show business, and I might need to drop off here in a bit.
Yeah.
Cause I got a heart out today, but,
okay.
I want to announce that I have a new podcast, or really my daughter has a new podcast that I'm on, called the Debut Film Podcast at debutfilm.com. I almost got the address wrong. Just launched its debut film podcast on all of your favorite podcast apps. So should be in all of them now if I've done my job right. If not, let me know and I'll make sure it gets added where it needs to get added. But basically the show is we take a look at actors' first films. So we take different actors and we watch their very first film. There's some rules that'll be covered in the opening of the show. We don't do horror. We don't do made for TV movies. It's actually has to be a film and they actually have to have a speaking part. And so my daughter, Kenny, and myself do it. It's going to be every 2 weeks. There'll be a new episode. So Let us know what you think. The first episode is Ryan Reynolds, and he did a film called Ordinary Magic. A lot of times these films are very, very hard to find. They're not on streaming. That's been a challenge. We had to order a copy of one. I can't remember which episode now, from like Australia on DVD, and I had to rip it because it just wasn't available. So
that's cool. So it is, you were correct the first time. It's debutfilmpodcast.com. So that is okay, that is your URL.
Yeah. Thank you.
I've got it linked in the show notes. Oh, congratulations. I can't wait to subscribe and listen. Yeah.
That'll be fun. How long is it, roughly? And how long do you expect them to be?
Roughly an hour. 45 minutes, an hour.
Yeah.
Right. Very cool.
That's what Matt Geekab started as. And we are currently, the idea of Matt Geekab was 45 minutes. We're at 55 right now. And we're about to go into questions. You've got 17 minutes for us, Adam.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay.
Yeah. Bruce has a question for us, and I will get to that now.
Okay.
He says, "Hi guys. As recently as Mac 14 Sonoma, a person could hold the Option key and click the green circle in any Mac window, and that would have the window go to full screen height. This was an easy way to open a full height window without taking over the entire screen. With the changes in Mac OS 15 Sequoia, that no longer seems to be an option. I've tried every key combination I could think of, but my favorite window resizing action seems to no longer available. Any help here?"
Dave, you had an answer.
Oh,
I've got one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you remember? Yeah.
I do remember this. I just had the flow in my head that you were going to take the...
I'm happy to go first. It.
Yeah.
So I found the way to do it, sort of. In Finder and System Settings, if you just double click the title bar at the top of the window, it goes to full height without taking over the full screen. If you double click it again, it goes back to its original size. Now, try that in any browser, in messages, in anything else, and it just takes over the whole gosh darn screen. So, but Finder and System Settings, maybe, I don't know about Safari. I wonder if it's Mac app specific. Nope. Do it in Safari and you're going to wind up it taking over the whole screen. So, it behaves one way on two that I've been able to find and not everything else, I don't know.
Thank you, Apple.
What the engineers were trying to...
Yeah, exactly. So if you float over and don't click, if you hover your mouse over that green bubble in Sequoia, in Mac OS 15, it's different than it used to be. But you get, 8 options, I think, for where you can place a window. And so you could, two of those options are full height, half screen. So if what you want is that window to be full height on one half of the screen or the other, then you can just click that. There is an app called Magnet, and Magnet enhances this. In a sense, they were a little bit Sherlocked by what Apple did here, but not really, because these features have always been there. They just look a little different. But with Magnet... it's one of these screen management things that allows you to do this. There is not yet a way to say, leave this window centered wherever it is and make it full height. Same width, same location, just, go top to bottom. There's not, but I wonder if an app like Magnet or an app like, what's the other one? Moom? Is that it? So this seems like an opportunity for a third party developer to step right in and do it, and maybe Moom has a way. I don't know.
I'm a little confused by this one, because this actually still works for me. The option click on the green icon, it will, instead of taking it into full screen mode, it just maximizes the window on my screen.
But that's not
the way you can tell.
He wants to go full height.
Full height.
Yeah.
Going to full width.
Huh. I don't remember it ever going to full height, but maybe it's a different thing. But what I did notice is that what the new hover thing, Dave.
Yeah.
If you use the trick when you're hovering and hit the option key, it changes all of those options, those resize and arrange options.
Really?
So like fill becomes move my window exactly to the center of the screen or to the left of the screen or the right of the screen. And the resize, you can now go down into quarter sizes instead of half sizes.
Ooh, very nice. Oh, could we do that before? I'm still running Mac OS 14 up here in the studio. Yes, option does change things here. There's more options in Mac OS 15, but yes, the option key does do some things. Love that. Yeah, but that's the thing. I am on Mac OS 14 and I don't see if I option click that, it does not go full height for me. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It always went full, like it takes up as much space on the screen as it can. I mean, that's how it always behaved for me. I use that all the time.
Yeah.
Because I don't like full screen mode, but I do like to maximize certain windows
right.
to use my entire display.
Oh, I've broken Finder on my computer here, so hopefully this doesn't yeah. I option clicked it and it just kind of froze. So that part was fun. Welcome to whatever it is Dave's doing to his computer today. shall we move on to the next question? Yeah, but if anybody before we move on, if anybody knows of a third-party app that does this, because I'm thinking Bruce might have been using one.
Right.
Oh, so if you know what app that might have been or it could be, let us know. feedback@macgeekup.com. All right, moving on.
You heard him. Hey, so John writes in, Dave, P. Adam, I would like your suggestions on a 27-inch 4K or higher resolution monitor for a new Mac Mini. I currently have a 2019 iMac, and I like the size and integration of computer and monitor, but now I want to decouple them from each other. Insights, opinions would greatly be appreciated. Love your show, John.
So, like with printer recommendations, the best thing I can do is tell you what I use and what's currently available. In my office, there is always the LG 5K display, which I think has been discontinued, but at least it's rarely available brand new. But is always available on Refurb, and I'll put a link to the Refurb in on Amazon. When I bought mine, it was $900 or almost a thousand, maybe over a thousand. Nowadays, as I'm checking while we're doing this episode, it's $703. This is a 27-inch 5K display, just like they used to put in IMAX, and it's gorgeous and all of the things. Right? It could be argued that there is nothing better. However, there are things that are quite similar and cost less. What I'm looking at here in the studio is the Philips Creator Series 27. I don't know, whatever the model number is. 27-inch display. And that is available right now on Amazon for $346 in a used scenario, $413 in like new. However, I will point out that this is a 4K display, not a 5K display like the LG.
Because in 27 inches, you can tell the difference.
Well,
if you've got 63-year-old eyes, man.
That's the thing, right? Like, to my eyes, this display is absolutely fantastic and for me indistinguishable from the LG 5K. I don't have them right next to each other because I like them both so much that they are each my primary displays, one in the studio, one in the office. But when I got this one, of course I put it next to the LG 5K. Color, every monitor is like displays colors a little differently, so I could easily tell the difference between them. But in terms of which one I preferred, it was like, yeah, sure, either one's fine by me. So
Wow.
Yeah. So, but you can also then go to Monoprice and look at 27-inch monitors there too. And Monoprice, you know, for $330 makes some fantastic monitors. ViewSonic also makes fantastic 27-inch displays. So, you're not going to go wrong.
Well, and my son just bought himself a 48-inch 4K TV and put that on his desk for a display. I'm like, that's a little big. No, I like it. All right.
So here's my thing about displays that are larger than 27 inches. The issue is that, you know, at 27 inches, a UHD display, which is what we would call a retina-ish resolution, right? At 4K, 27-inch 4K is 2560 by 1440 or whatever it is. And that – oh, no, it's not. Yeah, it is. No.
It's 4096, isn't it?
No. It's I want to get this right. What is the resolution on
come back to it.
Philips thing?
Make your point.
3840 by 2160, right?
Okay.
So if you that resolution at 27 inches allows you in macOS to retinize the display, giving you a pixel density that makes it such that you don't see the edges of you know, you don't see the actual pixels, right? And it, right. It's pretty and gorgeous. And that's why Apple did the 5K display, because I think there's probably some people at 27 inches that maybe can see the difference, depending on the monitor, maybe. But at 5K, no. As you take that 4K display and stretch it from 27 to 43, the pixels naturally get bigger if it's still a 4K display. Now, if it's an 8K display, that's different, but you got to make sure your Mac can drive that 8K display the way you want it to, and et cetera, et cetera. So this is a big reason why I haven't gone larger than 4K or than 32, is because displays have basically, at least in my price range, been 4K displays, right? And when 8K is normalized, sure, maybe then. But putting two 4K displays next to each other is awesome. So,
I think he did it for gaming. You know, he sits across it. Yeah, sometimes it's right in front of him and he can crunch it down. But for gaming, sits across the room and can still do it. But,
Yeah.
Oh, those are great options. Oh, man.
I
head on my Mac Mini here in the basement.
I sort of glossed over the ViewSonics, but like that's what I have to my right here is the ViewSonic, whatever it is, the VP2768 4K monitor, and also looks fantastic. Like it is moving things from the Philips display to that, or the LG display to that. Like they all just look great. So there are a lot of options out there. I've given you, four brands. Be careful at Monoprice. Quality at Monoprice on the glass has been great. A lot of times their stands are a little flimsier. That's how they save money there. But just make sure you're buying a 4K, sometimes called UHD display. Make sure that that's what you're getting when you do this.
Yeah.
So with any of these, with any of the brands. All right.
Cool.
All right.
I just, real quick on that last tip for the window thing.
Yeah.
I think I figured it out.
Oh.
If you hold down the Option key and double click on the edge of the window, it will full height it, top or bottom edge. And it also works for the left or right edge if you want to go that direction.
Option double click.
Like really? Right on the edge of the window. Yeah, you'll see your cursor changed to a little arrow.
Boom. You done did it.
Oh, this also works in macOS 14 as well.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
Here's the question. If you now you've got a smaller window and you go to the left or right side option, it goes to full width but not full height.
Right. That's what he just said.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you said you're
talking about full height.
Well, he said both. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it behaves differently if you don't hold option down. It does a bunch of different stuff. I've been playing around with it, trying to figure out all of the engineering's intense. But yeah, I mean, you can click on the corners, you can click on, and you can double click or option double click, and different things happen.
Nicely done. Huh. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't option key and you do the left side, it goes to the left edge of the screen. And yeah, play with that.
There it is.
I'm just glad you didn't blow us all up, Adam.
I think, if I'm remembering right, too, I think you can also hold the option key and drag, and it will constrain in that direction, I believe, in like go both directions, that kind of stuff.
Oh, I always you're forget right. about these things.
Man.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh,
yeah. I forgot. I knew these way back when, and then I just something came back to my memory.
Nicely done.
That's actually going to be useful. That's very cool.
Yeah. Oh, wow. On the monitor thing, the old guy in not the old guy. Old guy in our chat recommends the Asus ProArt 5K 27-inch screen.
Thought he was talking about me.
But $799 from B&H for a 5K screen. So there you go. I will put a link to that in the show notes too. So
my biggest issue with displays is none of them seem to have dual Thunderbolt ports. So if you want to do one cable to two monitors daisy chained together, not an option in a lot of cases.
I am pretty
sure. Which just frustrates the heck out of me.
I am pretty sure this Philips display that I am on has multiple ports.
That's cool.
Pretty sure
it looks like it.
Yeah.
BenQ had one for a long time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. That was the only one. So maybe it's gotten more prevalent. I haven't looked in a few years, but a few years back I was getting so frustrated because it was like, can you make these things daisy chainable? I don't want to have to use two Thunderbolt ports for two displays.
Right. I know you
drop.
Know what? We're at the end of the show here. We're at 1:12. We can call it the end. We don't need to take everyone's time. So
this is the end, my friend.
Well, Pete's gonna sing. That's
definitely
want to leave now, folks. Trust me,
it's not the worst. It's fine. I've heard Pete sing at MaxDoc.
I sang
Pete
last
sang.
Show.
Yeah, Adam sang last show. Pete sang at MaxDoc. Yeah. It's all fine. It's all I like it. It's good.
Yeah.
That's right. I forgot you sang in the last show. That was fun. Thanks for hanging out with us, folks. Wow. Make sure to enter the giveaway. MacGeekGab.com/giveaway. Thanks to Cashfly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Make sure you check out Adam's new show, the debut film podcast, Pete's show, So There I Was, my shows, Business Brain and Gig Gab. Fun stuff coming up. Just recorded with Parthenon Huxley. What an interesting guy. Fascinating stuff. Fun. And he actually sang in the middle of this. He wrote a little theme song for Gig Gab on the spot. It's like, all right.
Sweet.
Yeah, I know. Sweet. Thank you so much, folks. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com. And, we'll see you next week. Adam, before you go, quickly, do you have any advice, words of wisdom? Go.
Absolutely. Don't get caught.
Those are the words. Man. Thank you for hanging out, folks. I think we almost made it to the end.
We're here.
Later.